Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Some Newport residents have started a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to buy a new sign for the African cemetery known as God's Little Acre. The original sign was destroyed by Hurricane Irene in 2011. The new sign is estimated to cost $5,500. The cemetery is also the subject of a new website, and Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick has more on that.
God's Little Acre, a cemetery on Farewell Street in Newport, is thought to be the oldest and largest burial place for African Americans from the 18th century. Here lies thousands of free and enslaved blacks. And now you don't even have to go to see it. Teresa Guzman Stokes has created a website called colonialcemetery.com.
I think its importance can't be overstated. What drew me to it is the history, the people, the things that they've done, the things they accomplished. You don't find that anywhere else, not in the American South, and I don't think anywhere else in the North.
The website contains photographs of 240 headstones. Some of Stokes's favorites are Duchess Quamino, an enslaved widow who started a successful catering business from her master's home, and Newport Gardner, a slave who was a musical prodigy and eventually made his way back to Africa. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Today is International AIDS Day, a time to raise awareness about HIV prevention. The day will be marked by a statehouse ceremony attended by Governor Lincoln Chafee and his wife Stephanie Chafee, who is a nurse with expertise in AIDS. It's estimated that nearly 1,600 Rhode Islanders have died from AIDS since 1983. Approximately 2,200 people are living with the disease, and up to 100 people are infected every year. It's estimated that 400 Rhode Islanders are infected with AIDS and don't yet know it. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal is calling for federal authorities to expedite their review of Sunday's train derailment in New York. The accident killed four passengers and injured more than 60 others on board a Metro North commuter train. Blumenthal says there are questions about the state of Metro North equipment, tracks, and maintenance practices. Earlier this year, a Metro North train derailed and crashed into an oncoming train in Connecticut, injuring dozens of people and snarling commutes for days. And the Providence Public Library debuts an exhibit today on the constitutional challenges facing President Abraham Lincoln. The exhibit has been traveling the country for a couple of years and will be in Providence until January 21st. Providence Public Library spokeswoman Tonya Mason says there are no artifacts, just a series of large 9-by-9-foot square panels that encircle the reference room.
It's very colorful and lots of imagery of Lincoln and all of the images, you know, with regard to the war and the slavery aspect. So it's quite colorful.
Abraham Lincoln was elected the 16th president in 1860 at a time when the nation was falling apart. By the time he took the oath of office, seven states had already seceded from the Union. The exhibit seeks to resolve the basic question of the era: was the United States truly one nation or a confederacy of separate states?
With Mayor Angel Taveras running for governor, the parade is forming to take over City Hall in New England's second largest city. So far, five serious candidates are preparing campaigns. Four Democrats and Republican Dr. Dan Harrop, a psychiatrist. The Democrats are a mix of the familiar and the new. The best known is City Council President Michael Solomon. Based on his fundraising prowess and political smarts, Solomon, son of former State Treasurer Anthony Solomon, is viewed as the early leader. He's also lined up top-flight campaign talent in pollster John Della Volpe and consultant Mike Donilon, a Providence native with a national reputation who helped David Cicilline win the mayoralty in 2002. Solomon has worked closely with Taveras and hails from Elmhurst, an important electoral foundation. Yet he's never been elected to anything beyond his home neighborhood and is not as articulate as several other hopefuls. The most intriguing new face is Jorge Elorza, a Latino and Roger Williams University law professor who holds a Harvard Law School degree and is a former city housing court judge. But he has yet to demonstrate that he can raise the money needed for a high-profile campaign. Political consultant Brett Smiley has a background in lobbying and running campaigns, most notably former Lieutenant Governor Charles Fogarty's near miss for governor against Don Carcieri in 2006. Smiley was head of the Providence Water Supply Board and has an east side base, but has never been elected to anything. So far, Smiley's had more success in fundraising than Elorza. Another candidate with an east side residence is Lauren Adrian, the former chairman of the State Board of Governors for Higher Education. As chairman, Adrian shepherded the measure that allows the children of illegal immigrants to qualify for in-state tuition at Rhode Island's public colleges. Adrian has been involved in nonprofit community efforts, has a financial business background, and is the spouse of novelist Ann Hood. Then there are the wild cards. State Representative John Lombardi, a veteran Providence politician who served briefly as mayor after Vincent A. Buddy C. Ancy resigned as he was facing federal corruption charges. Lombardi lost the Democratic primary in 2010 to Tavares and has had difficulty raising money. He was also crushed in that race on the east side. The wildest card is Cianci, who's been urged by former Mayor Joe Paolino to run. Cianci's a polarizing figure. He twice left office over felony convictions, once in 1984 and again in 2002. The demographics and ethnic mix of Providence is far different than it was when Cianci first won City Hall in 1974. Cianci's also in his 70s now, has become closer to his grandchildren since the tragic death of his daughter Nicole Cianci, and is earning a hefty living as a talk radio and television commentator. 21st century Providence is a much different city than it was when Cianci or Paolino served as mayor. A city of contradictions, Providence has some of Rhode Island's wealthiest neighborhoods on College Hill and along the Blackstone Boulevard. It's also host to the Seen Better Days sections on the south side off Broad Street, where gunshots shatter the night. In mayoral elections, as in Orwell, all neighborhoods are created equal, but some are more equal than others. The prosperous neighborhoods of the east side are the fulcrums of victory in the new politics of Democratic primaries. Candidates who get beaten badly on the east side, such as Paolino in 2002 against Cicilline or Lombardi against Tavares in 2010, have scant chance of winning. If you think Federal Hill is still a crucial neighborhood in city politics, you've spent too much time in the dark reaches of Camille's restaurant on Atwell's Avenue and not enough at Julian's on Broadway, where the servers have more tattoos than the NBA. A Federal Hill resident today is more likely to be an artsy hipster or college student than a bookmaker or DPW worker. Unionized public employees were once a crucial constituency in Providence politics, but the end of rules requiring city police, teachers, and firefighters to live in the capital city have diluted union clout. When less than 15% of the firefighters live in the city, how much does it matter which candidate their union endorses? Latinos are the emerging political power base in Providence, as shown by the 2010 election of Tavares as the city's first mayor of Hispanic ancestry. Tavares is unlikely to get involved in the mayoral contest because he'll be campaigning for the State House and won't want to make any enemies in his home city. With his money, pedigree, and campaign talent, Solomon's the early favorite. But there's so much time to go in this contest that anyone who thinks they can predict the outcome is probably dreaming.